So, good to have you here. Thank you for coming. We don't have conflicts of interest. Our funding is from the Indiana Minority Health Coalition. And I want to introduce our team quickly, and we'll talk about the setting and the context. We'll talk about what we did and what we found, and welcome questions at the end. So several of our colleagues are here. Dr. Priscilla Barnes, Dr. Ametu are with us. Marlon Bailey is not with us, but Tony Gillespie from the Indiana Minority Health Coalition is with us, and Anita Omit was not able to join us. So let me just say that we're talking about stigma, structural elements of stigma in a Midwestern state. So not quite the cachet of New York. And so we are 50th in per capita CDC investments. You know, basically we're not invested well in the public health context. From a rurality context, and this isn't just rural-urban kind of thing, it's all about population, population density, distance from a metropolitan area. We've got quite a bit of diversity around rurality in Indiana. And so when you think about stigma and you think about access to services, there are a lot of problems that you want to be thinking about. I want to just point this out because a lot of our work, in fact, much of my research agenda is driven by a research agenda in HIV prevention that was developed by the community in Indianapolis, in Indiana, I should say. And part of that led to a secret shopper study which formed the basis for our stigma work that we'll report here. I can send any of these things to you guys. And then we investigate the pharmacy environment and the CHC environment or community health centers. You'll understand why when we share our findings for today. So we're talking about stigma. We're talking about people's experiences when they encounter HIV testing. And so the voices that you hear are the voices of men and women who are ethnographers and engaged in the secret shopper testing study, which was the basis for our study that I'm reporting here. And in 2011, we had 23 men and women who reflected the epidemic visit the 33 test sites that we funded from the state. So this is local health departments, CBOs, but not their outreach testing, their entrance testing, essentially, and community health centers. And we found things that really, really surprised us. Why? Because these are the folks who are supposed to be around the table, and these are our friends, right? It was a 20% test failure rate. One in five tests did not result in a test. One in five attempts to get a test did not result in an HIV test. And of those sites, almost half of them, 42%, had confidentiality issues that the ethnographers rated as my stuff didn't feel private to blatant HIPAA violations. And then almost half, the last question I asked ethnographers, so basically I had given them a recording device, and within 30 minutes of their test visit, I asked them to kind of go around the corner and share with me what they couldn't share with me in person. And I asked them five open-ended questions: how did it go, how did you feel, et cetera. The last question was, if you had to get tested here for real in the future, would you or wouldn't you? So if you needed a test for real in the future, would you go here at this site? Yes, no, why not? And almost half of the sites received a no return rating. So when we're talking about setting up a system that encourages a lifetime of sexual health screening, we weren't doing so well. So we then decided, okay, let's understand more about the why of this. And so this is what we're sharing now. We think there were structural impediments. We thought it had to do with stigma. We weren't really sure. But we needed to understand it much, much better. For some reason, I keep going backwards. Oh, that's weird. Let me go forward. Here we go. And so we all know stigma in some way, right? And so it's like fog. You know it's there. It's palpably felt. But when you try to grab at it, it's not there. And so understanding it and studying it is really tough. And so we looked at it through the lens of structural and institutional stigma. So structural stigma being kind of rules. So think operational rules, how you do this, how you do that. And you'll see what I mean as I unpack this. Institutional, think I for intentional. So they're about the same, except that institutional stigma are structural forms of stigma with intention. So we used this lens when we talked about stigma, and we also thought about stigma in a variety of ways in terms of its expression, right? So judgment or prejudice or labeling or stereotyping, certainly. So we went essentially back to the data to understand, hey, what's the evidence of structural institutional stigma in these settings, and how do test sites produce this? How does this happen? It's created. How does it happen? Not just personally. We wanted to look at the institution. How does this being there get created, right? And so we're talking about social geography, which is essentially the social sense of being in place, right? This is all about social phenomena in space. And again, this will make more sense when I give you some examples. So we took a look at the 81 transcripts from the secret chopper testing study, and we looked for evidence, essentially, of structural and institutional stigma. Again, I can answer lots and lots of questions that you might have about this, certainly as we move forward. We used independent coders, and we resorted. This is all good qualitative research methods. Bottom line. So I can tell you the geeky stuff later on, really. The big stuff was we found both expressions of structural and institutional stigma. So we found them both there. And what was interesting about this is that there were three places that they were really seen. So think about compounding experiences of stigma. And note the stuff in the pink. These were causal triggers, not the fault of the person. But being black was a problem. Disclosing orientation, sexuality was a problem. Disclosing needle sharing was a problem. And unsafe sex. And if you're in HIV testing, you know we ask for all this stuff, except they can see you're black or not, right? And in this case, these were the things that triggered the expressions of the stigma at social level. But there were some institutional things to be thinking about. So I'm going to give you a couple of, I'll unpack this for you, and then I'll give you some examples so you can hear the voices of the people who had experienced this. So we saw structural discrimination at the first encounter. And this had to do with really how things were organized, right? What that social geography was around the site. Was it a place known for certain things, and was that stigmatizing? All individual, not for everybody, but individual, right? What I want you to be thinking about is if you're in public health practice, think about your organization and think about how it might contribute unintentionally to these things, okay? Space, physical or virtual, I had to go through the catacombs to find the damn test site, right? And if you've been to an STD clinic, you know what I'm talking about. At the same time, maybe the information was virtually hidden. I got lost in a phone maze, a phone mail maze. I couldn't figure out where the HIV testing part was. When we trained these ethnographers to do the secret shopper testing study, we told them nothing about the test sites. We were just talking about how to gather data. Why? Because we wanted to learn from their experience of getting there, right? On top of that, we had some organizational behaviors, unintentional, all for the purpose of the organization, maybe its effectiveness, efficiency, but it was use of phone menus, voicemail. And some of our ethnographers were forced to leave a message. Hi, this is Beth Meyerson, and I want an HIV test. I hope I'm calling the right number. This was not unusual. I'm sorry, we're not going to test you unless you can assure that you have an English language interpreter with you. Don't come. Oh, I'm sorry, you have to answer my risk assessment on the phone. No, I can't. I can't speak privately right here. I just need to come in. I'm sorry, you've got to tell me what makes you think you're at risk. So decisions of the organization to function, for its own functioning, caused this otherness that was experienced by the participants. And then, of course, staff behavior. Well, no one was there if it was a voluntary organization. One of my ethnographers called my cell and was like, Beth, I left my fifth message that I wanted a test. Can I stop trying to get a test there? And so these first encounter experiences were really mediated by decisions that the organization made for itself. They weren't trying to be stigmatizing, right? And so it still left this sense of just not being part of it. And many of the ethnographers, they thought they'd done something wrong. Structural discrimination was seen at a second place, and that was once they got there. So the entry and the reception, we saw it in social geography. One of the waiting rooms wasn't a waiting room. They shared it with a courtroom, right? Another place was a WIC clinic, which would have been fine, except then behavior compounded at reception. Oh, okay, you're laughing with the moms at the WIC clinic, and then I walk up and I say I'm here for an HIV test, and suddenly everything's pretty serious and formal. And that was noticed. It's palpable to the client, to the person, right? Policy testing only patients. Well, we were not going to test you unless you're a patient here. Well, you're a funded HIV test site as a community health center. I'm sorry, we only test patients. And then again, staff behavior. They're apathetic to the experiences of access problems that were really lived at that first level. I'm sorry, whatever, the phone mail, whatever. What do you want, right? Now, they weren't trying to be stigmatizing, they just were apathetic. Again, otherness, push away, push away. And then the other piece was we had an experience where, in several test sites, where they ran out of tests. Now, we're in Indiana, we don't have a high incidence rate, and we don't keep tests on, apparently, in some test sites. So someone might travel 100 miles to get there, and that's just too bad. Sorry, we ran out of tests. You're going to have to come back next Tuesday. Sorry, I took my job. Took time off from my job. Whatever, man. You got to come back. We don't have tests. Mm-hmm. So here they are at entry and reception, that second space of walking in to that test site. And they have physical and social experiences. They feel other. And the space itself communicates this kind of barrier, right? Structural discrimination was seen at that final place of testing. And incidentally, in the first study of secret shopper testing, it was the tester that reduced or mitigated or helped to erase any of the negative feelings that they had experienced up to that point. So at least there was a light at the end of the tunnel, and it wasn't a train. But by then, they still had to navigate through just a bunch of stuff before they got to the tester. But there was structural discrimination experienced at testing level as well. And it might be something like a breach in confidentiality. In two cases, well, they were busy, and they were interrupted. And you want to test, and there are two of you guys sitting in there. We're going to test you, same time. Institutional discrimination was experienced here at entry and reception, negative responses to the test request. And now this is intentional. Apathy, silence about your access issues, confidentiality breach that was intentional. You can't get an HIV test here, she yells across the reception area. Right? Staff behavior, this breach of confidentiality, and judgment. So as our testers disclosed about their life, or they could make up their own narrative if they wished, they felt very palpable judgment. I felt like a junkie. I felt wrong for having unprotected sex. I'm sure no one in this room has ever had that. So what we found was that people experience stigma in multiple ways, simultaneously compounding this deleterious effect just in the way they were trying to get a test. And our ethnographers, these brave men and women, felt protected somehow by the fact that they were secret shoppers, but they felt that pain and that frustration and that shame and that judgment. And so many times they would tell us, I will never come back there, ever, ever again. I'm not sure I'd go anywhere after that. And we wonder why 20% of the population who have HIV don't know it, and how we produce this ourselves, and we're the good guys. So organizations need to rethink how we set up our business, and to do so through the eyes and the experiences of people who use them, right? So knowing that, it'll take a step. And it's totally worth it to understand. Tell me how you got here. How did you access it? Not in the minute that I'm providing services, but maybe you've got clients that already inform your business now and say, talk to me about the access problems you have getting in this door. We've got tons more information to share. Tony and I are here as well as the rest of the team. But we just wanted to give you a few things to think about when we think about how we're really set up and what structurally we can accomplish together to really remove those barriers. Thanks so much.